Welcome to Shattering Myths, a program devoted to the most important and fastest growing segment of society. To those who know that the world's political, religious, military, and economic institutions are corrupt, that they are counterproductive, and that they cannot be fixed. Our phone number, if you'd like to participate in this discussion, is toll-free, 877-300-7645. We'd love to hear from you. I was amazed, I probably shouldn't be, but by the SRN News comment at the outset of this program, where SRN News, and trying to deal with the fact that in the first quarter, the U.S. economy did not contract by 1%. Back at the time we first reported the contraction. Now, the contraction is an entirely different beast than a reduction in the rate of increase. You know, typically it's usually for hidden inflationary reasons, but also for increases in populations and the like. An economy like the U.S. will grow at between 3 to 6% a year, sometimes more, typically not much less than that. And, you know, when you look at just the population increase in the United States, that means it's not even keeping pace with population growth. And if you look at what we're doing in terms of inflating our currency, which is devaluing it, it's not even remotely keeping pace with the increase in the money supply. But to have a report of a 1% contraction in the first quarter, which was the initial report, it was pretty devastating. But the economists said, oh, it had nothing to do with anything other than global cooling. But now, as a more accurate assessment has been made, and this is something that has been consistently true of the Obama administration, every time that they have released information, they have flavored it, and that the actual news is far worse than they previously reported. Well, this time, the admission is that the first quarter rate of government contraction wasn't 1%, but instead 3%. Now, that's a big number. That's a serious recessionary number. As a matter of fact, the last time we saw numbers that large, we were in the middle of the Great Recession. So this is a very serious issue. And yet SRN had a spokesperson that just passed off and said, oh, that's all in the rear view mirrors. We shouldn't be concerned that the government lied to us and said that the contraction was about 1% when in fact it was really 3%. Don't be worried about those kinds of things. It's, you know, a few hundred billion dollars here, a few hundred billion dollars there. People are buying houses. Yeah, sure they are. Everybody's going to be happy next quarter. Great. Now, serious folks, this is another instance that simply demonstrates that not only is our government routinely, deliberately, and consistently trying to deceive you about everything, but it has many willing stooges going along for the ride. It's interesting, by the way, that the two things that caused this severe contraction of the U.S. economy were less spending and health care. And you might say, oh, wow, what a big boon for the Obamacare. Boy, it's taking health care spending down. No. It's that much of what people would have had done, they could not do or did not do because of the issues associated with Obamacare. Last month, for example, and we're just a small snapshot of this, but my wife runs our farm in Virginia. And, you know, we don't have all that many employees, but, you know, we have half a dozen employees. And she was trying to reannualize an insurance policy, one that she had to change entirely about 6 months ago because our old plan was no longer valid because it had been ruled inadequate by Obama Nation. And as she was going through the process, the old process, which is that, she'd make a phone call, an agent would present, here are your options in terms of premiums and deductibles and coverage. And it was a process that, she would go through and over with the agent and over 30 minutes to an hour, review the choices and make the commitments, send the initial check, and you'd be on with your life. This time it was days that turns into weeks that turned into months. And form after form after revealing testimony, it just went on and on and on. It became so laborious, taking so much of her time and the agent's time, she came very close to saying, we'll just self-insure. It is the fact that government getting involved in health care in a more massive way has just made the whole process less efficient. That's what's happened. Also, U.S. Exports fell in the quarter by 9%. Oh, that's a real serious blow. That means the very few things that we actually make that we sell overseas, they decreased by almost 10% in the quarter. There was news out of Baghdad that is mind-numbing. And, there's a lot of stuff that's going on in this world that just makes you shake your head. And this is one of them. At least 57 people were killed, and the number will ultimately be closer to 100, with several hundred severely wounded. We know of 120 that are severely wounded now, but by the time the dust all settles, this will be over 100 dead and several hundred wounded. As a result of what authorities are saying were Syrian warplanes flying over the Anbar province of Iraq. I mean, you just have to shake your head and say, no, tell me it isn't true. I mean, here's the United States doing everything in its power. Where the United States, with the Obama government, about a year ago, was ready to, in fact, actually sent the U.S. fleet and started moving all manner of warplanes and bombs and missiles to the Mediterranean so that it could coordinate attacks on Damascus. And we wanted to bomb Damascus. It was Putin that kept us out of a war in Syria. And yet now we have the Syrian Air Force bombing ISIS. You just have to shake your head and say, no. I mean, I must be living in one of those, I think they called them Escher prints, where all the little, they had the line drawings and Escher would create a surreal world where stairways went up and then sideways and upside down became right side up. And it's just really a twisted world where it was impossible to achieve any proper perspective or orientation. Well, I feel like we're in one of those Escher prints. The United States is labeled, the Assad government is the greatest criminal on the planet and wants to bomb it, is supplying all manner of weapons to ISIS in Syria to confront them. And then you have the Syrian government flying its warplanes over Iraq to fight ISIS. All the while, you've got the Iranians in Tehran bringing in thousands of special forces and weapons into Iraq to bolster the hundreds of thousands that have rushed to the Shiite militias, to join the Shiite militias in Iraq. All the while they're fighting the Sunni warlords that America armed during the awakening programs that General Petraeus gets so much credit for. that he should be, you know, exiled as a laughingstock. The whole world is just utterly bizarre. Now, when these airstrikes first happened, the Iraqi government actually reported that they were American drones. But no, they were Syrian warplanes over Iraq. Now, you'd think, and this is what's just really amazing, that when ISIS captured billions of dollars, I mean, many billions of dollars worth of U.S. war equipment in its raids on the Anbar provinces, particularly when they captured Mosul, that at that point, what they began to do was to take much of the military hardware out of the country and into Syria to better protect it. And you would have thought that the Syrian government would have then bombed the locations in Syria where ISIS had retreated with that military hardware. But no. And it's not that they didn't even bomb a military outpost of ISIS. They bombed markets and gas stations. They didn't kill a single ISIS operative. They killed women and children. I mean, the world really has gotten to be bizarre beyond comprehension. The Sabah Kahout, the head of Iraqi's Anbar Provincial Council, told CNN that the attack struck markets and gas stations. The Syrian regime carried out the barbarian attacks against civilians in the Anbar province. He said Wednesday, today, we will hold an emergency meeting in Ramadi to address this issue. Kahout said that he was certain that the warplanes were Syrian because they bore the image of the Syrian flag. But initially, the Iraqi state media reported that the attacks near Iraq's western border with Syria were carried out by U.S. drones, a claim that was forcefully denied by the Pentagon, especially since they only killed civilians. What a mess. Wait, this is about ready to boil over into regional war and maybe world war. If I'm understanding this story correctly, that Syrian warplanes killed 57 people and injured 120 civilians in markets and gas stations in Iraq today, then, you know, I just don't see a reason why the United States, since the United States is now flying 35 air shorties a day in Iraq, evidently to gather intelligence, that with America now flying 35 missions a day over Iraq, and with the Iranians flooding Iraq with all manner of weaponry and special force troops, and with the Syrians obviously now engaged in flying air missions, airstrikes over Iraq, and with the United States arming the Sunni rebels in Syria with surface-to-air missiles and with anti-aircraft guns. I mean, this sounds like just a great new opportunity for a video game, for, you know, a computer army game. Why not? I mean, you've got a fair fight now. You've got ISIS with anti-aircraft weapons and surface-to-air missiles. You've got the United States coordinating sorties between the Syrian government, between Iran and itself. It sounds like a hell of a plan. Well, it sounds like hell is what it sounds like. I mean, imagine what we're doing. In what world could you even imagine that the United States military would be providing Sunni Mujahideen with anti-aircraft guns and surface-to-air missiles in Syria, and then coordinating attacks between Syria, the U.S. fighters, and Iran to oppose them in Iraq. I've got to tell you, it's about the most bizarre story that I can remember reading in years. Separately, the Pentagon said that 90 additional U.S. troops, how could they be troops? I thought they were advisors, arrived in Iraq as part of a group of up to 300 advisors that President Obama said last week he would deploy to assess the situation. U.S. aircraft are now flying, as I mentioned, 35 manned and unmanned daily surveillance flights over Iraq. Reuters reported on Wednesday that militants had attacked. By the way, who are you going to call militants here? I mean, ISIS is a fairly significant international force. But the Mahdi Mujahideen and other Shiite militias outnumber them. You know, the Iraqi army that the United States spent $25 billion to put in fancy uniforms, put in very expensive vehicles, and armed to the teeth, you know, $25 billion, is almost a million strong. I mean, who here are you going to call a militant? Are you going to call the Iranians that are now coming in militants? Are you going to call the Shiite Mujahideen militants? Are you going to call ISIS militants? Or are you going to call the Sunni tribal leaders that have joined them militants? Or are you going to call the Assad regime the militants? Who are the militants? Well, anyway, this story says that militants today had attacked one of Iraq's largest air bases. Yeah, this was Camp Anaconda. You know, when U.S. troops were present, this was one of the primary operating facilities for U.S. troops in and out of Iraq. Well, now it's surrounded on three sides by ISIS, and it's being besieged by mortars. Meanwhile, al-Maliki, the Shiite, accused Sunnis of collaborating. This would be Sunni tribesmen. This would be the Sunnis that America stripped of power. This would be the Sunnis that America then armed in the Awakening program. He accused the Sunnis of collaborating with ISIS militants and slammed the call to have a national salvation government that would remove him from power. Now, he's right. They have coalesced. And the reason they've coalesced to a large degree is because that when America gave Iraq to Iran, the Iranians view the Sunnis as infidels worthy of death. And so they began to oppress the Sunnis, and they did so in draconian fashion, particularly in Fallujah, where they began to shoot U.S.-made artillery and Apache helicopter Gatling guns at the civilian population, as if the United States is actually living in the Escher print world that is upside down and backwards, and there is no way to assess reality. It called on al-Maliki to resign. I didn't actually call him because we're too wimpy to say that. We don't want to decide who runs Iraq. That's for the Iraqi people. But if you want our help in saving the government, you will replace him. That was the basic intent. It's the same thing we did in Vietnam. It's the same thing we did in Afghanistan, and what you end up with is amongst the most corrupt regimes in the world. They figure that, you know, that their own people will kill them once the American backing is gone, so they might as well enrich themselves to the greatest degree possible. And the big play by the United States is that al-Maliki needs to create a inclusive government where all of God's little people can live in harmony. And yet in the world of Islam, that will never occur. Islam is vicious towards Christians, and it's vicious towards the other sects of Islam, and it's vicious towards non-Muslims. It is even vicious towards its own sect of Islam when there's a dispute between who gets to wield the power. And al-Maliki is correct that now he is nothing but a puppet of the Iranians, to be sure, but he is correct in saying that it is Sunni tribesmen tribal leaders, societal leaders, former members of Saddam Hussein's military and government, as well as those who were in power economically and administratively in the country, that have leagued with ISIS. And they did so because the Iraqi government, using American weapons, started shelling, flying warplanes and attack helicopters and firing artillery into cities like Fallujah. And, you know, nothing has a tendency to irritate people more than you bombing them. And so this is their response. It's just amazing that the United States is pretending that there's going to be an inclusive government. Al-Maliki says, no way. Iraq is facing a cross-border terrorist attack that is supported by some neighboring countries. Guess what neighboring countries he's talking about? Saudi Arabia, Kuwait, even Jordan. You know, it's hard to admit, but in this particular case, the person telling the truth is the scumbag Al-Maliki, and the individuals who is delusional in line is the President of the United States. Hello, Glenn. Boy, we seem like a broken record here. The United States is on the wrong side of everything.
Oh, yes, but everything is still proceeding according to plan. Actually, yesterday I missed out on an extra 5 seconds I needed for my sports-related one-liner. So,
okay.
If I may, I'd like to offer it now as a...
Oh, you know, well, a belated one-liner. I don't know if that's acceptable, but we'll listen.
Okay. Well, considering how much he's paid and how little he plays, I really wouldn't want to hear Kobe beef.
Kobe beef.
Anyway.
There you go. Yeah, yeah. It is truly amazing that the world is up in arms over LeBron choosing to play where he wants and him willing to take huge reductions in salaries, you know, in the range of $10 million a year, making $10 million a year less to play where he has a better chance of winning, and yet Kobe Bryant gets paid $25 million for not playing.
funny, and even though those numbers sound really disparate and astronomical, you know, we also mentioned yesterday how these guys are cash cows and how much more they bring in than what they're paid overall. So
correct.
People just don't have a perspective of the kind of numbers that are going on there.
Yeah. Yeah, there's particularly if we look at the Clippers, which is, you know, a natural landing place for LeBron, because, you know, Blake Griffin has a marvelous advertising, in fact, multiple companies that pay Blake Griffin to advertise for them. In addition to that, you've got Chris Paul as the leading spokesperson, I think it's for Travelers Insurance, not Travelers, but State Farm, or one of the insurance companies. And he's one of the most heavily paid endorsers in the country. So, yeah, we have reached a point where the salaries are far less important than the royalties. That's why when Peyton Manning signed with Denver, it spoke volumes about Peyton Manning that he took a $20 million salary, when in fact the man is paid many times more than that in endorsements. You know, there was no reason whatsoever for him to take anything more than a minimal salary, since he has all of the endorsement money in the world, and let that team build a defense that was capable of supporting their offensive prowess. But he didn't do it, and he's not doing it again this year. And he just, the one player who does it to the extreme is LeBron James. And yet the way the media treats him and the public treats him, you just shake your head and say, what's wrong with us?
Well, yeah, crazy quicker. Now you're enjoying this way too much, so that's enough relief. Back to the misery.
Okay. All right, back to the misery.
Yeah. You know, if the Syrians were going to bomb, I kind of wish they had done it when that convoy was running up towards Mosul in the first place. You know, I understand that we don't want to bomb our own pickup trucks and our own weapons, you know. But if they were going to, there's sort of a daily and there's Keystone Cops fashion missing
everything. It is true that if Americans spying over Iraq, because the Syrians wouldn't have had that capability, but if American spying over Iraq was capable and recognized the massive amount of pickup trucks moving towards Mosul, but they didn't really begin there. They began in, you know, in Anbar and Fallujah,
well,
places like that.
At some point, they were out in a convoy. They was,
right.
They could have been taken out with one C-130 gunship and four
A-10. Yeah, yeah. So at that moment, the United States would have been the only one to know they were doing it. And it would have been funny, I guess, if we had contacted the Syrian Air Force and say, hey, Assad, can you dispatch a shorty to take these guys out? But once they had reached Mosul and they had confiscated billions of dollars worth of American personnel carriers and tanks and the like, at that point, and they're blended into the civilian population, at that point you can't discriminate between the Iraqi army and ISIS. They're in exactly the same equipment and American equipment, and you've also got the issue of the fighters themselves are blended in with the civilian population. At this point, I don't think it's possible to bomb Iraq and have any better results than Syria just had, which is zero ISIS, 70-some-odd civilians.
Yeah, that's not a very good ratio. And as horrific as all this is,
yes,
I find that I'm also concerned that we could be on the verge, like we're just in a timeout at the moment while both sides kind of get rested and refreshed and you know, get their reconnaissance done and their equipment beefed up, or what could be like a real bloodbath in the Ukraine. It sounds like Porky is getting ready to, you know, do a mass slaughter.
I don't know.
Ukraine, and that could be designed to trap Putin into acting.
Yeah, it's really hard to read. It's true that, you know, I thought for a moment you were going to say there's a timeout in Iraq, but there is absolutely no timeout in Iraq. The ISIS is on the full boil. In the Ukraine, today, the Russian parliament withdrew the ability for Putin to deploy Russian military assets in the Ukraine. It's fairly clear, although I'm always cautious about saying fairly clear, but it appears that the Russians did supply Russians in the east with an arsenal capable of surviving the constant armed onslaught by the Kiev government. They, at this point, have not engaged a single troop, a single member of their military in the east. And so it's and yet you see not only the Ukrainian government, Kiev government, being more aggressive in the east, but they're also losing most of these battles. I mean, they're shooting down now Kiev warplanes and helicopters, and killing 50, 60, 70 people in a day. Now, the peace plan that was proposed that has this momentary truce, it calls for the Russians in the east to lay down their weapons. Well, they're not going to do that, you know. And it has the army from Kiev, you know, surrounding the eastern cities. I mean, that is a mess there. Other than the belligerency between the United States and Russia, where the United States is the aggressor and Russia is relatively passive, you know, I don't care much what happens in Ukraine. It's interesting in some ways, only from the perspective of American foreign policy and belligerency and how we act in the region. But we really don't have a dog in that hunt. I have no idea. In fact, yesterday, the United States held a summit of world leaders to impose more sanctions against Russia, while Russia was saying that we're going to withdraw the parliamentary approval to send troops into Ukraine. And while the United States is sending troops into Iraq, we said we need more sanctions on Russia. And you just shake your head and say, what world are we living in? I mean, is it such that no American politician has seen a mirror in the last 100 years?
Well, not to mention, Russia still has Europe by its gas lines, and some of the major primary gas lines have been blown up. So,
yeah.
You know, what they can easily leverage Europe and say, hey, you know, put some pressure against the U.S.
Yeah, but, you know, also the Russians finally cut off gas to the Ukraine. They did it 4 or 5 days ago because they're owed $1.9 billion. And they said, until you pay us, we're not supplying you with any more gas. Instead of forming a coalition government where everybody sings kumbaya, Malaki instead appealed to his Shia constituency by saying that he is adhering to the wishes of the Shiite religious leader, al-Sistani, who is calling for tens of thousands of Shiite men and boys to support, and they're really not to support the Iraqi army and government, which is what this statement says, but to fight on behalf of Shia Islam. So, you know, right now you've got probably in the range of 300,000 Shiite militia fighters who are being led by members of the Iranian Special Forces. And in addition to that, you have 900,000 Shia Iraqi fighting using American weapons, trying to oppose what, you know, when you read the size of ISIS, it's hard to imagine that ISIS has more than 25, 30,000 Mujahideen, jihadists. And so there, you got 35, so just say they're 50,000, that they've gained a lot of Sunni warlord support. Say they're 50,000. They're still outnumbered because the two groups of Shiite fighters between the government's army and the militias are at 1.2 million, 1.3 million. I mean, it's the most lopsided scenario you could ever imagine. And yet the individuals who don't have a government, who don't have any way to buy military hardware, are winning every battle. I looked at a map this morning as to what ISIS controls. And ISIS controls, you know, two-thirds of Syria, virtually all of Syria, with exception of the area immediately around Damascus, which is in the southwest corner of the country. And they control about 50% of Iraq. And they've now, in the most recent battle, taken control of the border crossing between Iraq and Jordan. And in addition to that, the second largest air base in Iraq is what they've surrounded on three sides. And you just shake your head and say, how is that even possible? They must have Allah on their side, I'm assuming. Well, on the outskirts of Baghdad, according to this particular story, where there are American journalists, they say there's an eerie sparseness on the major highways. And the writer is saying, how in the world is Baghdad going to be protected when on the major highways into Baghdad there's no military presence? He says that there was a post battle video that purported to show army forces celebrating a victory of ISIS just west of Baghdad. But their victory, they had two guys that they had shot draped over the hood of a Humvee and says, "Look, those are ISIS. They're jumping up and down. We killed them." But even the writer of the article says, "But wait a minute, you know, ISIS is formidable. They have captured most of Iraq's cities and towns. They have captured most of Iraq's territory, all to create an Islamic State. They are extraordinarily well-armed and well-financed." And the highway from Baghdad to Abu Ghraib in the Anbar province showed absolutely no readiness of the Shiite government to repel them. There are no tanks, no big guns, no military presence. He said also that in this particular report, the marketplaces are now nothing but a desert wasteland. The Jordanian minister, meanwhile, said that he fears the strength of what he calls radical militants could spill across borders. Of course, that's what's going to happen. It's what IQ Arasuli warned us about last Friday. His quote, "We've been saying this for a while, that a rise in the spread of extremism and the politics of exclusivity will threaten the security of the entire region. He said, we need to root out the root cause of this sectarian division.